And guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Your blood run hot, twist you, turn you, you can learn merengue on the spot. I don't care where you come from, you're far from home, gal, have your fun, your indiscretion will be concealed. She said, wait, mister, you must have made a mistake. My road short, tell me clear what contacted me. Hush up, put away that thing, gal, the writing is too large. From now on, it's Jeffrey's in charge. I'm gonna whine and dine you, hook and twine you, make your blood run hot. Tease you, squeeze you, short to please you, Jeffrey's on the spot. Don't tell me about you, it's your poor, it's 9 o'clock at the hotel door, and I am pleased to reveal, madam, it's all in the package deal. Make your blood run hot. Twist your turn, you can learn merengue on the spot. I don't care where you come from, you're far from home, gal, have your fun. When she gone home, she or she friend.
Good yawning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 23rd of August, 2022, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. It is Tuesday. That means it's a World News Tuesday with Mark Palmer. Good morning, Mr. Palmer.
Good morning, Erin. How are you?
I am good. Thank you. I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
Beautiful.
Good, good. Yes, I could see you are beautiful. You are star fruit sunshine in today. Thank you. Thank you for the wonderful star fruit. Well, there are typically two types. There's the yellow star fruit and the white star fruit. Both are in bloom and on the ground. In fact, I went up into a tree to pick some star fruit this weekend, and it was a very difficult process because there were blossoms on the tree at same time as the fruit on the tree, right? And so I had to try and pick fruit without destroying blossoms.
And you have to be delicate because when they fall, they squish.
Right, and I was using a picker. So, and then some of them grow, it's almost as if they grow directly from the body, the trunk of the tree, right? Or from the branch. So it's not like a limb and then a branch and then some twigs and then the fruit. It comes straight from the limb.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to be very careful not to bruise, right? And so it's a very delicate process. You got to be a master at it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn how to pick star fruit if you want to pick them for commercial sale. It's a real skill and industry. Same thing with almost all of the fruit without cracking up the shell, with mangoes without bruising or cutting the skin. And for our plums, you know, it's hog plum time. Hog plums are on the tree getting ready. You have to be very, very delicate. In fact, Let me introduce our guests in the Zoom room, and I'm going to get right back to our hog plums. In the Zoom room this morning, we have Mr. Jace Brannon from Spectrum Politics. Good morning, Mr. Brannon.
Good morning, Aaron. It's good to be back.
Good, good. I hope you could bear with us while I just have this word about the shifting culture of agriculture. Because I noticed...
I'm just here learning.
Oh, good, good. Because I bring you here so we could learn some things from you today. You found yourself in a fortuitous position, and I'm eager to hear about that. But back to this hog plum time. I don't know if people have noticed, but what the hog plum palette, like what people expect from hog plum and from like scarlet plum has shifted over the years. Mm-hmm. I grew up with fruit, right? Because I was used to eating tree-ripened fruit. But as I grew up and had to access my own fruit, which meant I was typically buying it from vendors on the side of the road, I realized that we'd eaten less and less tree-ripened fruit. And so by the time I started selling fruit in the market, when I would have access to and sell tree-ripened fruit, I would have people telling me, oh, no, I don't like it like that. And maybe it's my bias. You know, you're allowed to like the fruit however you like it. Maybe it's my bias. But I was stunned. And so I inquired, you know, and I seemed a little nosy, but these are the questions that you have to ask to understand what's happening in these spaces. So I asked, well, why? What is it? It's too juicy. It's too, you know, it overripe. I don't like it like that. And then I realized that people were used to eating fruit that ripened off the tree. And that's so that traditionally that's what they know as the flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the plums, the hog plum, the scarlet plum, the red Spanish mombin plum, even the June plum, right? We are transitioning more to Latin American applications for eating fruit. Even the mango, we're using applications that are used to eat fruit that isn't tree ripened. Right? The chili, the lime, the salt, those all enhance
the sweet. Not the mango.
Yeah. They enhance the sweet that is muted because it wasn't tree ripened. And so I realized, though, that I'm not sure if we're documenting this.
Well, I know some Dominican guys from the Dominican Republic, and they always want the green mango and salt. Mm-hmm. That's how they like to eat it.
Now, as a Bahamian, I am like appalled. I know it's a cultural bias. I know I can't kick you out of my country because you won't eat the green mango. Trust me, I ain't on that run. I just saying though, I'm allowed to be an old lady and sit back and how to eat the fruit properly, not realizing that you're right. They don't understand how to eat the fruit properly because you didn't make it possible for them.
But it also had different application, like papaya. I have papaya in my yard at the moment, and we have green, and we have them tree ripened as well, and then you can eat them. But the green ones we use for cooking.
Right, for tenderizing, right?
Right, right. You put them in a stew, in a vegetable stew, and you put the meat in, and the meat is done in like 20 minutes.
Right, or you can shred the papaya and put it on the meat as a marinade, as a part of your marinade, right, to prep the meat as well. Yeah, and then there's green papaya salsa, green papaya salad. There are different types of applications that are generated or come up from spaces where maybe it's a agricultural space and they pick everything green and ship it out for it to ripen on the journey. And this is then how we begin. The same way with grouper and with fish, like we typically sent out the best cuts of grouper, the best fish with the dregs, and then wonder how it is we've developed this culture. It's typically like culture comes out of how we live, you know? And so why this came to mind for me, not just because you brought that beautiful bowl of star fruit that I'm going to try and eat on the break, but because we've been looking for hog plum, and they're not ready yet. Mm-hmm. And it's about to be late August. We're in the last week of August. And so 5, 6, 7 years ago, in 2016, when I was in St. Croix, and driving on the road, and I saw a hog plum, but they were giant. They were massive. They were like porking plum. And I asked to stop, and I said, what are those? Because I want to make sure it's the same thing. And they call them September plum. It was October at the time. They call them September plum. Well, our fruit season, our hog
like
plum
that.
Season is pushing back, right? It's later. Fruits come in later. Mm-hmm. And so it looks like our hog plum are going to come back in September again. But we hear stories of older Bahamians talking about eating, right, and how it sustained them. And so it's just fascinating to watch or to observe, right, and assess what's happening in our local food culture and to determine what is causing the shift, right? Is it man, is it our behavior that's shifting the way that we eat food, or is it the adaptation of the fruit itself to the environment, like we see with the hog plum? We're going to eat hog plum later this year than ever before. Or maybe it's a cycle, and that's why they call it September plum, because we used to get it in September.
Mm.
And it's the changing climatic or climate patterns in this northern part of the Caribbean, right, that shifts and causes our season to change. Anyway, I find it all...
That's interesting.
And
right.
and I hope we make a link to the conversation we're having
today. You have
to
ask the old people how it was back in the day.
I don't
want,
Mark, I don't want to ask these old... All I know is that every summer, thousands and thousands of Bahamian children used to leave their parents' house. No note from the doctor.
And nobody cooked for them. And
nobody cooked for the island, and they survived off of fruit and plum and mango and this and ganep. Yeah. And sea grape, and all they do is tell us the stories about how good it was when they was children. I don't want to talk to them. I mean, I really, really do want to talk to you all. Please forgive me. I would love to hear from older Bahamians. And I think we need to be documenting this the same way that we document political history, right, and governance. And I think that's so very important. And that's why I've invited Mr. Jace Brannan to join us this morning. Mr. Brannan, I heard that you attended the event marking the 30th anniversary of the FNM's first general election win. And
that I did.
And prior to that night, I think it was that Friday or Saturday night, the former Prime Minister, Hubert Alexander Ingram, had not spoken at the FNM headquarters in
all... That's also correct.
What an opportunity to hear him speak, but you had an even greater opportunity to ask him a question. And so I saw that clip, and I thought, I want to talk to Mr. Brannan. I don't know if I can ever get a chance to talk to Mr. Ingram. Of course I want to talk to him. But your question was very, very interesting, and it sparked an interesting response, and I want to talk about that a bit this morning with you.
Most definitely. So first things first, as a little bit of background, persons who have heard my voice on your show before, they would know that I'm very interested in political history and trying to soak up as much knowledge as I can. Now, the fact that this was the first appearance by Mr. Ingram, invited appearance, he specified that, invited appearance to speak at a FNM event at the headquarters in 10 years. First of all, that made me feel old because I remember watching Mr. Ingram resign in front of the 2012. And I was thinking, my God, it's really been 10 years since then. But I went and I attended, not with the intention of asking a question, but I just wanted to be a part of the audience and listen to what Mr. Ingram had to say. But a friend of mine sort of nudged me during the question and answer period and said, Jace, do you have a question?
Uh-huh.
And I simply responded to her by saying, I do now. And so I took about 15 seconds to just gather my thoughts and come up with something on the spot. And it ended up being a question that I have asked for quite a long time, from a little boy to now, which is, what is the philosophical difference between the FNM and the PLP? And I wanted to hear Mr. Ingram's take on it, him having been Prime Minister for 15 years and in public life for so much longer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I feel like now is a good time to ask, like you say, let me clarify this. Did he indicate that he had not been invited to speak in 10 years?
Yes, that is what he indicated.
That's even weightier.
When you think about it, and the full recording of the interview is available at the AFINAB's Facebook page if anybody wants to go and see the replay. But when you think about it, it's not that surprising, is it?
Yes, it's absolutely and terribly surprising. I mean,
it's disappointing, but it's not surprising. And I only say disappointing because you would expect that someone of his status, right, mm-hmm. would have addressed his own political party more recently than this. But we know of the long-standing public disagreements between Mr. Ingram and his successor in FNM leadership, Dr. Hubert Minnis.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Dr. Minnis said the Ingram era was over, which, if I'm not mistaken, was a statement made back in 2013, that kind of effectively removed Mr. Ingram from being a part of active leadership of the FNM for quite some time. And Dr. Minnis held on to power in that organization for some 9 years.
Do you think Hubert Ingram left? Remember that when he lost the election? And
he resigned.
And he resigned, and it almost seemed like a fit of pique. And do you think that may have had something to do with it? Because I think it did, in a sense, tarnish, you know, his achievements, because I thought he was a bigger man than that.
And a couple of things at that moment. Wasn't it that Ingram followed parliamentary convention? Like, when your party loses, even if you won your seat, you're supposed to do the right thing, well, do the honorable thing, well, do the Westminster thing and resign. So, I mean, maybe he had a bit of an attitude about it, right? But it was, wasn't it the thing to do?
There's half and half there, Aaron. By convention, it would have been appropriate for him to resign and not become the leader of his caucus or even remain as leader of the party. But there was nothing saying that he had to resign his duly earned seat. And I think the fact that on election night, without waiting for all of the results to come in, without letting there be a period of grieving within the party, he just said, yeah, I'm kind of done. So party leader, after I've led this organization for almost 2 decades, I feel like that left a bitter taste in the mouth of some person. So, yeah, I think Dr. Minnis' statement at the time was... that was a factor in it, as well as the known truth that whenever Mr. Ingram speaks, everyone listens. FNMs, PLPs, DNAs, independents, everyone listens. So perhaps he just didn't want the cloud of Mr. Ingram hovering over his, at the time, new leadership.
True. As I have some questions here about Hubert Alexander Ingram, the icon, right? And I sort of want to transition to that. But do you remember, I think it was the 2007 election. 2007, Hubert Alexander Ingram was the leader and prime minister at that election, right? And then 2012, Christie came back in. 2017, Minnis took the government. All right. So 2007 election, on the post-election rally, Ingram unceremoniously, if that's the correct word, fired two media personalities from ZNS, Steve McKinney and Philippa Russell. Do you think that the manner in which he left, that we're talking about, the bad attitude, bad form,
seemed very vindictive,
right? Yeah. Was he trying to avoid a similar situation? Like, was he trying to avoid sort of getting it back the way he gave it out? Because I thought it was disrespectful and unnecessary to fire both of those figures in that way. But I felt that the treatment of Philippa Russell was horrid. It was horrible. And no matter what she has done, she didn't deserve that treatment. Do you think Hubert Ingram was trying to leave the stage before he was visited with, you know, the same type of treatment?
Well, I'll say this. I've heard stories about Mr. Ingram, of course. I'm 11 years old, right? So
yeah.
I I barely remember any of the contents of those speeches, but of course I've read about it, I've heard about it.
Yeah.
I think that Mr. Ingram has always shown throughout his political career that he is able to make very quick decisions, even if those decisions do not involve consultation with friends and foes alike. And if I had to guess, I think that just in 2012, he had looked at his resume in politics, he had looked at the total amount of time served, and he realized, hey, if I was to keep leading this organization, right, in preparation for the 2017 election, where he would hope to lead them into government again, that's a 10-year cycle, you know, at best, before you get to accomplish your agenda again. At his age and with his resume, I think he's just like, I don't even want to bother. Should he have done it differently? Hindsight is 2020. I think most FNMs would say yes. But it's clear from the reception that he received at the head, but he's not anymore.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that Ingram was the first president, prime minister for the whole Bahamas since Pinling? Like, he was the first leader that garnered the allegiance and loyalty, the respect, the deference, and the attention of all Bahamians, regardless of party, when he was the leader and when he wasn't the leader?
I think that only someone who could do those things, like you just mentioned, could topple a Pinling dynasty of some 25 years. If the Bahamian people at large, from all kinds of different affiliations and stripes, didn't respect Mr. Ingram, I don't think the FNM would have been able to topple that dynasty. So, yeah, I guess you could say that. And again, hindsight is 2020. We haven't seen Mr. Ingram speaking so much, so often for a while. But it is clear from the reception when he speaks that he does have the respect and admiration of many. And I have said publicly, you know, that I've come to accept just the truth, and
okay,
I want to come to that conclusion.
I want to ask you a question that I didn't put on the list. I want to ask you something that may be a surprise. It may be a surprise to many people when I ask it. Does the fact that our former prime minister has a confidential informant number from the U.S. government, does that impact your perspective on him, the politician, the leader, and him the leader of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas?
You know, Aaron, you got to hit me with something harder than that, because I knew that as well.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I know, but I didn't. It's still a rough question for many people. Not just that they don't know it, but they're not necessarily prepared to hear that question in the public.
Yeah, for sure. It's not really public knowledge at this stage. But I'm not certain that most Bahamians would alter their opinion of Mr. Ingram based upon that information. Just call it a hunch.
Is it because you think that Bahamians want a maximum leader? Because I think he really encapsulated that whole thing. They wanted a strong man, you know, somebody who was decisive. Is that, you think that's still the case, or?
To a certain extent, I think Bahamians are extremely practical when they come to their voting decisions. They really look at persons who they believe are going to make a tangible impact in their lives and their families' lives. I don't think that there is as much of a sense of how is this person going to govern for the whole country and the wider community as perhaps there may have been. But these days, I think Bahamians are very much like, what can you do for me? And so the bigger issues of, well, is this person of moral perfection? Is this person someone I'd have a beer with, which is what they say in America, right? Mm-hmm. That's a standard they judge people by. I don't even think that comes into the equation over here. It's very narrow. It's very what you could do for me. And can I imagine you governing in my best interest? Also, for some people, let's just be blunt, it's can I financially benefit if this party comes to power? Mm-hmm. And for some people, because of party loyalties, one of the two major options on the scene at any given time. That's just the reality of how it is over here.
I've argued that Bahamian voters, the Bahamian electorate, has been very clear to the political class and to politicians about what it is that they want, even if it has not been clearly articulated. Over the last 50 years, Bahamians have been very clear, and the message has been to Bahamian politicians, do what you're doing, but keep my money straight, right? Do yeah. what you're doing, but at the end of the day, maintain the strength of the Bahamian dollar and my buying power, and ensure that I can maintain the lifestyle that I've been accustomed to. I think of all of the messages, incoherent, poorly articulated, of everything, that has been the resounding message from the Bahamian public. Keep my money straight, keep my the dollar strong of myself.
I think that's spot on.
And I think Hubert Ingraham, and in some of his commentary, because I want to ask you, I want to get into that moment of, you know, what was said and what wasn't said. But I think when Mr. Ingraham began to define, and he talked about less interventionist, less government ownership, broadening economic base of country was one of the differences between the FNM and the PLP. I think that has been what people trust with Ingraham, right? That this boy is going to make the decisions necessary, pull in line who needs to be pulled in line when necessary, right? To ensure that our economy remains strong and powerful. Do you think that's an accurate reading of the FNM political ideology?
I think it's an accurate reading of the Ingraham ideology, because Mr. Ingraham went to great lengths, if you listen to the clip, to stress that these were the hallmarks of his time in power.
But okay, FNM beyond Hubert Ingraham? I know that the FNM existed before Hubert Ingraham became the leader. In fact, we know that Hubert Ingraham was a PLP. But does the FNM exist beyond Hubert Ingraham?
I think it exists, but do people understand what that common thread through history is or is going to be? And I think the answer to that is no, because I felt like my question was answered well from Ingraham's perspective, but he made it clear to say, this is only my perspective and this is only me speaking for my time in office. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a good conversation with my dad the other day, and I told him, when you do something once as a political party under one leader, that's a that leader era policy. So that's an Ingraham era policy. Mm-hmm. If you do it twice under two different prime ministers, that becomes a party policy. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you can't say, and this is especially more difficult in the FNM's case because there have only ever been two FNM prime ministers. If you can't say sort of a policy mantra that was consistent between two different FNM prime ministers, then it's hard to say that you have a consistent brand. And if there is one, then it falls on the FNM to communicate that better to the public so that they know.
All right. So I want to ask you these texts. I want to run through these texts with you. I got a caller on the line, and then I want to get to the interview itself and sort of what happened in the room. You know, what did the space look like? And that could that give us an indication of what to expect from the future or the new FNM? Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. I am sorry I lost you, caller. So let's get to these texts. Aaron, didn't you ever hear the saying, girls shouldn't climb trees because it causes the tree to rot or not to grow fruit? I'm sure you heard this, you're old school. Listen, we talking about new politics, not old politics. We talking about new politics. We're going to get back to that text. I had to throw that in there because that sounds like some old politics, new politics talk. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Okay, being decisive all the time is not always healthy for a nation.
Mm-hmm.
Because that can comes as a mistake sometimes,
mm-hmm.
because you may be sound in your judgment and not listening to other people. I remembered with Clifton Key,
mm-hmm.
the property that Mr. Ingraham sold, the Bahamian at large. A lot of people were saying that is such a historical plot of land. Don't sell it. But it took the Christie administration to come in and buy it back.
I get
you. This Lord of the thing, Mr. Ingram, he did well, but he made mistakes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's
okay,
fair.
He made mistakes. No prime minister is perfect, and I realize that.
Yes.
So I'm just hearing this, Mr. Ingram.
But because you ain't giving me a chance to get on Pintard yet. I ain't going to get on Pintard too.
I just want to bring them, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
You
absolutely.
Know, I'm just saying. He made many mistakes.
Yeah.
He's an own minister. Then on a talk show, he said they made mistakes, mm-hmm. but he didn't move them.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying, you know? I'm just hearing. Give me the good and the,
bad.
You want to be really objective?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely, the good and the bad.
The thing is, do they ever apologize for the things they didn't do well? Because they seem to trumpet the things they've done well, right?
Yeah.
But what about the things they never say sorry, right?
Very rarely, very, very, very rarely. And I got to go buy that book. I got to go look for CI 1622 Avenue and Frank Watson Boulevard to go find a copy of that book so I could find out if he ever apologized for anything inside that book. Mr. Brennan, I got two more calls on the line. Let's get to these calls, and then let me get back to some of these texts. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
I like the conversation of what's going on. Good morning to everybody who's listening. Porfia, how you doing, Ms. Green?
Good, thank you. How you do?
I'm Rachel, holding on. Thank God for life. You said Pintard next. No. Yeah, Pintard. We don't know what the future could be. He might be the next prime minister. We don't know. But is Christie next? Like the lady saying, they wasn't put on a show talking about Ingram. Maybe do something on Christie next, then Minnis or whatsoever. But let me say something about Hubert Ingram.
Mm-hmm.
Hubert Ingram, like the lady said, he made a lot of mistakes. And he did some good. You know, one of the things I like about Hubert Ingram?
Mm-hmm.
Us being the people, we is ever bold. They say we is scary. They say we peculiar. When they see us in other parts of the world, they say we walk a different kind of way and all.
Mm-hmm.
Hubert Ingram, when he came there, I mean, we ever was that way from Selendon in time, encouraging us to be a certain way and standing for what we own. But Hubert Ingram, like he encouraged us a little bit more. Not just because he was, you know, so boisterous and stuff like that. Like, to stand up for your rights. One of the things he did is open up this airwave and allow me to speak and say how I disagree with some of the things what he was doing. You know, although he might say he care less what you say or whatsoever, I give him the credit. I want to thank Mr. Hubert Ingram for everything good what he did for people personally and for us collectively as a country. He wasn't perfect. Maybe some people say, and I might agree with him, that he do more damage than good. But I have to respect him for the good what he do, because he ain't none of us perfect. And I open up this airway so we can speak our mind.
Oh, yeah.
And the majority of the politicians who came before him, you can speak your mind. You don't use no profanity. You don't say nothing. Or you cuss me on the radio. They forget they just a servant. To know. That's so sickening. So you wouldn't come here, you wasn't perfect, you do a lot of damage,
and
you do a lot of good.
Look how we open up the family islands.
I give him a lot of credit for opening up this airway so we could speak our mind, Ms. Green.
Absolutely, and bringing water to the people when they didn't have water in the 90s. Imagine that. You're absolutely right. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good morning, Aaron Green. Good morning to you, guests. And I think you are FM representative in there, right?
No. The guest in the Zoom room is Mr. Jace Brennan, who's been a regular on my show, but he is representing, Spectrum Politics is the...
Oh, okay, got you.
Yeah.
And I thought he was a member of the FNM.
No, but I wondered if... That's why I was trying to figure out how he get in there. If I knew it was open to the public, if I even knew it was happening, I'd have been there.
But let me say, no one is addressing former prime minister said he would never appoint.
Oh, yeah, we're not going to address that.
Why you not going to address
that? Because I don't, first of all, on the political culture and avoid the conversation about what's in front of the courts right now.
Yeah, okay. But I know Ingram is a lawyer, and he addressed it, but media should have picked it up and addressed it the way he addressed it. And he said he would never appoint. He said, I'm not going to do law.
With the courts, yeah.
He said he would never appoint any for their chairman.
Right, I think the critique in that is y'all was so quick to get rid of me, Hubert Ingram, that you didn't pause to assess what of my policies was sound and valid and valuable, and you should have kept. You just went with that same old political culture of stop, review, cancel.
And no one asked the opposition leader since they have a court issue, why didn't you force him to resign? Have a good day.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Like I say, the reason I am not delving into that part of the conversation is we want to avoid that, right? And most importantly, we have to dragged or into our other aspects of governance, right? Let's not let politics taint everything. It's involved, but it doesn't have to taint it. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. I think we lost that caller.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Hi. I'm glad we didn't lose you.
Hi. Good morning. I'm appreciating the conversation. I just want to say I have lived from 63 to now, and our prime ministers before, Prime Minister Pindling, Prime Minister Christie, Prime Minister Minnis, all of them did some good for the country. I think we need to understand that what was being celebrated this past weekend by the FNM was 30 years of winning the government in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
Who anchored that? It was Prime Minister Hubert Alexander Ingram. And he, too, was being celebrated, the delivery boy. And I believe this moment, along with those who ran that relay with him.
Yes.
And I believe Prime Minister Ingram ought to be celebrated, respected for what he did in 1992 and beyond. He's an elder statesman of this country, and he's respected. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Absolutely. Absolutely. And please don't let the sort of political satire, don't confuse it with irreverent. I mean, sometimes it's irreverent, you know. You're right.
Sometimes
but
it is.
It is. But but there is respect for him. I got calls and texts. But, Jace, let me tell you all a quick story. I want the caller to hear this story as well. So people could get a sense of what that election meant to many Bahamians. Right? So I grew up in a small community, a little tiny little pocket of cul-de-sac in Northern Johnson Road. And on the evening of that first win, I had an older white Bahamian neighbor, animal advocate. I mean, she'd do anything. The election results were called. I was hanging out with my neighbors. This is it was a really big FNM neighborhood. It still is, I think. And somebody lick off five shotgun. Pop, 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 pop. And then we ran out because there's a bunch of young people, you know. I was just too young to vote in that. I hadn't, I think I wasn't able to register. I just turned 16, I think. I wasn't old enough to vote. And we ran up to find out that it was my elderly white neighbor, and she just bust off her shotgun for the five terms that the PLP had the government. And there was this cry from the neighbors when the shots lick off. Like, everybody knew what it was. People felt like they were freed. And then when the FNM won again, I think in that 2007 election, in a neighborhood adjacent to my neighborhood, I had gotten all the, Fred Mitchell had all the, and they were pretty, they were colorful, I had a bunch of them. Well, my neighbors, my friends, them took my PLP paraphernalia and burned it in the road. Right? And I want people to get a sense of how other people were feeling. When the FNM won these elections, there are pockets of Bahamians that felt like they had been trapped or enslaved, and they were free. But that 1992 election in particular, you know, and Jace, it's something that we have to demand that older Bahamians talk about. It's something that we have to pull out of them and document it so we could get a real sense of why Bahamians feel the way they do and why these deeply held allegiances to these political parties.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that I've been speaking about for my entire journey in politics, which is now over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I did want to bring up something that was, I think, mentioned earlier by the caller, just picking on you, caller. talking about me, that same question, except about the Progressive Liberal Party, when just before the election last year, Spectrum did a young voters panel, right, with two other young persons and some persons who would end up becoming a part of the cabinet of the Bahamas. We didn't know that at the time, of course. And just generally speaking, the polarization and the temptation to box persons when they attend these events, I don't think is a positive thing for our democracy. I went to the event on Saturday, Friday, because I wanted to, and it was open to the public. Now, granted, I do have friends in all political organizations, but that's because I make it my mission to, and to get as much information as possible. If I'm really going to learn about politics, especially the eras I was not a part of, I was not alive for, or I was too young for, then you have to be a good student. And so I was trying to be a good student on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I say, you are a political analyst and commentator. If parties should be welcoming people like you and the general public to these events. One Text, great show as usual. You would not be... loose lips sink ships. It ain't what you say. It's how you said it. Mr. Minnis could have gotten his point across without saying Ingram's era is over. Mr. Ingram has his faults, but he was a great leader. Mr. Ingram is in the same league with Mr. Pinling in his first 15 to 20 years. Okay. Is Ingram, that's Pinling's first 15 to 20 years. Hey, okay? Is what you're saying. Great show as usual. If it weren't for Ingram, you wouldn't be able to read these texts. No matter who the FNM has as a leader, they would always be compared to Papa, which is not fair to any leader because it's only one Papa. He can't be duplicated. That takes us into the question about, you know, the questions about Pintard.
But actually, you know, I wanted to ask about, you know, we were talking about the ideological differences. Mm-hmm. Do they actually matter for the vast majority of Bahamians? I'm talking about the partisan, you know, the POPP, the FNM. Does it actually matter to them? Or does it only really matter to that swing voter? You know, and it'd be interesting to know how many of those swing voters, is it 30%, 40%? Those are the ones that you're targeting? Because you can't, can you, Jace, can you actually communicate with the hyper-partisan supporters?
Part of the electorate.
Do they really care?
I don't know. And I've been trying to get to the bottom of that for a few years now. I am leaning towards no, because when you look at the results of the last election, since that's so recent, let's talk about that. You look at the results and you see that the Progressive Liberal Party won a large victory in terms of seats. But in terms of their actual number of votes, they barely improved when compared to their performance in 2017. And yet the outcome is almost a mirror image, right? Not a mirror image, a reverse image of what happened a few years ago. I think that says that PLPs are going to vote PLP. It's just a question of if every PLP is going to vote, right? There may be some circumstances that turn out maybe a couple thousand votes less, but it's still in the ballpark of, you know, several tens of thousands of votes. And the same thing with the FNM. When you look at the FNM's vote share, they dropped by a little bit less than half of what they got in 2017. So if everybody was motivated and turnout was normal, we would have had a much closer election, eh? I don't think there's much you can say to the persons who have that real hyper loyalty to the FNM and the PLP.
No, they're
either going to show up or not going to show up based on how they feel their party has performed over the last few years. I think it's the swing voters who care so much about the differences.
Absolutely. We got to go to a break. I pushed the break so long. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Aaron Green. We'll be right back.
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM. No problem, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Here we go. J.S. Johnson Insurance, and on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Good morning. Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Aaron Green, with my guest co-host, Mr. Mark Palmer, and my guest today, Mr. Jace Brannan. Caller, I know you're on the clock, Mr. Brannan. Somebody said, great show as usual, Ms. Green. Could you bribe Papa with four duffel bags of Gnep to come back to lead the FNM, please? Mr. Brannan, I think there is nothing that we could offer Mr. Ingram that would cause him to come back. I think that he has experienced all. He did it for reasons, like he did it because he loved the Bahamas, whether we loved him or not, right? And I don't know if there's anything we could offer him to make him come back into politics. I think if he wanted to come back, he would come back.
Yeah, and what he said, I know it sounds like I'm being a Mr. Ingram spokesperson, but I'm only informing persons what I heard at the event. When he was recounting his political journey in the country, he said that he didn't want to come back in 2007 and that there's no one in this Commonwealth of the Bahamas that could say that he tried to force his way back into the party. He was asked the question, if your name was thrown in the hat at the FNM convention in 2005, would you accept? And his answer was yes.
Mm-hmm.
His answer has changed. And we know because in the last round, absolutely not. Don't put my name in the hat. And this was also his response a few years ago when Mrs. Loretta Butler Turner and Dr. Hubert Minnis were going at it a couple of times. This question came up, hey, maybe we should bring back Ingram. And he said, again, no. If y'all call my name, I guess say no. So really, I think that talk is dead in the water.
I get you. Now, Mr. Brannan, when the show is over, I'm probably going to hound your WhatsApp and beg you to come back tomorrow to continue the conversation. I didn't expect it to go in the direction it went in, and I want to read these texts, and I want to get to this last caller. Text says, Aaron, between 87 and 92, the American... Okay, I said American. Y'all let me pause for a second. Okay, Tex, I'm going to take a picture of this and send this to my legal team and ask them if I could read this out loud. But I want you to know I saw your text. Another text, yes, Pendling's first 15 to 20 years, you can compare Ingram to that. Another text, there's no ideological difference. The FNM was formed by disgruntled PLPs, upset that they were not given parliamentary positions. Yeah, of course the FNM was formed on ideology. Ingram, come from the PLP. Wasn't it formed on PLP ideology, just better? I'm just saying,
right.
I'm not making that assessment myself. And I heard you there, Mr. Brannan. Another text, when Ingram and the FNM won in 92, that was the most excited I had ever been in politics, even to date. Actually, that was my first time voting. We lived in Nassau Village at the time and ran out into the streets rejoicing and piled up into several cars and went to the FNM headquarters. I guess my feelings displayed on August 19, 1992 was how some people felt when the Bahamas secured independence back in 1970s, including the current. Well, look here, it was a time. The island was alive, buddy. It was alive. Mr. Brennan, I'm going to have you back in tomorrow, please.
I'll see you tomorrow.
To my texters, I'm going to take a picture of all of these texts, and I'm going to read them tomorrow, including the Scarlet Plum text. And more importantly, this texter who is very upset. I got you. 554. I got you. I'm going to read these tomorrow. Anyway, Mr. Palmer, thank you.
All right. Beautiful.
Mr. Brennan, thank you so much. See you tomorrow.